The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good morning. So last week, I talked about relaxation as a foundational, useful thing to do. Relaxing creates a very good foundation for being able to have insight, to be able to see clearly what's going on. And one of the areas of our life that it's really helpful to become wise about, to really see well, is to see the whole process, nature of thinking, and the nature of what a thought is. And a very kind of powerful statement around thinking that I'll kind of start off with and let it kind of linger in your mind, maybe get your attention on this topic, is that it's more important what you think about significant life events than the event itself. That's quite something, huh? I mean, all kinds of things can happen. Wonderful things, tragic things can happen. And it's more important how you think about it than the event itself. So you might not agree 100%. You might be ready to protest, but it's true maybe 95% of the time. And anyway, it's a very important idea, is that how we think about things. And our relationship to our thoughts, how we relate to them, how thoughts relate to ourselves, is probably one of the leading indicators of stress, the causes of stress. And we sometimes attribute stress to a lot of things in the world, how things are. Our schedule is full, we have all these demands, many things. But at the heart, it's how we think and how we engage in our thinking that is a source of a lot of stress. An image that sometimes I've thought can represent how thinking goes sometimes is a cat that's chasing its tail. And, you know, a little kitten. And, you know, it just goes circles, never catches its tail. It's always running and running and running. Or another image is a very complicated freeway, intersections of freeways, where there's a four-leaf clover of on-ramps and off-ramps, but they just kind of feed into each other forever. And so you're on this, you know, freeway and getting off and on. You can't, there's no way off, out. Maybe unless you stop your car on the side and jump over. You know, sometimes thoughts can be that way, just like it's, and sometimes they become a traffic jam, you know, the thoughts. So the idea of becoming wise, to start looking at our thoughts, to understand them, and part of the advantage of really beginning to stop and looking at the way you think, how does your thinking work for you as a person, and getting wise, stepping back in a sense, and beginning to track, and you know, what happens when you think, how do you think, is that you then can begin, you know, using your thoughts in wiser ways. You can relate to them in wiser ways. It'd be kind of like you have a friend who needs to use a computer, but has never used a computer before, doesn't know anything about, doesn't know what a mouse is, doesn't know where, you know, how to turn it on, doesn't know, you know, anything about the computer. And doesn't even know how to use a keyboard. Imagine that. But they have to use a computer, so they're always having you over, so you could do it for them. You know, you're like standing over your back and say, "Oh, we need to do this, we need to do that," and you're like doing it. You know, and you could do that. It's very helpful for them. Maybe it's great. Or you could teach them how to use the computer. This is how you turn it on. This is how a mouse works. This is where the, you know, whatever, right? And then they can take care of it themselves. So it's kind of like that. We have this software, this whole operating system inside of us that very few people have really learned about what's going on in there, how it works, and how to actually operate and work the whole realm of our thinking and thoughts. One of the classic stories around thinking in the Buddhist tradition is a story about two Chinese monks who were wandering around China, the custom of monks often to wander around, and go from temple to temple, monastery to monastery, and visit teachers. And they came to a creek, through a river, and they had to ford across the river. However, there was a woman on their side of the river who had trouble getting across. She couldn't quite get across by herself. And so one of the monks picked her up and carried her across. Now, Buddhist monks, apparently back in those times, generally, are not supposed to actually touch women. So this was breaking the monastic rules. But he picked her up and put her on the other side, helped her over, helped her out. His companion, his monk that was walking with him, two of them walked the rest of the day to the next monastery. And when they got to the next monastery, later in that day, the second monk kind of couldn't contain himself anymore, and he said, "Ugh, you know, how could you have done that? How could you have picked up that woman?" And the first monk said, "I put her down at the river. Why are you still carrying her?" So why are you still carrying X? Probably all of you have something you're still carrying. Why are you still carrying it? What are you trying to do by ruminating and thinking and repeating and certain themes, certain ideas, certain memories, certain plans? Do you know why you're doing it? Do you know the benefits you're getting from the ruminations that you do? Do you know what the top themes are in your thoughts? Are your thoughts completely random and, it could be anything at all and so random that given enough time you'll compose, Romeo and Juliet, great plays, like monkeys, the keyboard, right? Are there particular themes that keep reoccurring for you? And do you know what the top three themes are for the week, for the day, for the lifetime that you have? Some people have particular themes that just keep revisiting over and over and over again. Where are you in those themes? Where do you fit into it? Are you mostly thinking about, will the Giants have a chance this year? You're thinking about that because you really have a lot of care and compassion for the residents of San Francisco, and that's important to think about, those people and their support, those fans, and so it's nothing to do with you. It has to do with those fans and supporting them. Or is there a lot of the thoughts that you have, a lot of the common themes, are you a central character? Does it have some important role in your life, impact for you? And what is that role that you have? What is what way are you thinking about yourself? What kind of ideations? Are there delusions of grandeur that go along with it? Are there delusions of, what's the opposite of grandeur? Delusions of misery, delusions of unworthiness, delusions of blame, delusions of I'm terrible. What goes along with the self-referencing aspect of the thoughts that you have? Have you stopped and taken a look at this? One of the things about discursive thinking, and discursive thinking is really one of the major problems for people who try to be mindful. Thinking is not a problem necessarily. In fact, it's possible to have a very friendly relationship with thoughts. We certainly don't want to treat thoughts and thinking as an enemy when we practice. They're an important part of human life, and we should, hopefully develop a very nice, working, friendly relationship to thoughts. But one of the aspects of discursive thinking, which is having a conversation, kind of ruminating, thinking about something over and over again, analyzing something, planning something, kind of like having a conversation in your head or creating a whole scene in front of you, an image of what if you think in words, in images, is that then the thinking is turned around and focused on itself. The energy that goes, energy of attention in the mind has been somehow pulled into the black hole of thinking, and it kind of feeds it and keeps it going. And what we're trying to do in mindfulness is not have this, cat chasing the tail, or this energy of the mind, caught up in the swirl and ongoing kind of feeding of discursive thoughts, without having some ability to choose where our thinking goes and how we think, not lost in it. And so what we're trying to do in mindfulness is to step back And be able to know that we're thinking when we think. And that's the kind of the simplest way of becoming wise around thinking, is to know. Oh, so much so, it's kind of like, you know, if you hear someone speaking, maybe outside your window, and you can't maybe hear the words, and you know, oh, someone's speaking out there. Isn't that interesting? I was up, it's middle of the night tonight, maybe 4 o'clock in the morning. I went to the bathroom, and the bathroom window was open, and someone was talking out there. So what are they doing talking out there, 4 o'clock in the morning? You know, what's going on? You know, but I couldn't hear what they were saying, but what, you know? It was kind of a loud, it wasn't an angry conversation. If it was angry, I would have made some sense. It's, you know, I don't know. But it just was just like a loud conversation. So I knew I could hear someone talking. So in the same way, can you know that you're thinking? Some people have a very hard time with this. It's kind of very foreign, the whole idea. Like, what? How? What? Some people, I think, it's kind of like they swim. It's like they say that fish can't see this ocean, the water they swim in. So some people can't see the thoughts that they swim in, that they're constantly involved in and going on. And so that's why one of the functions of meditation practice is to, in fact, slow the mind down, calm the mind, and strengthen the attention so that we begin catching and seeing what goes on. And one of the great insights, the really important insights of insight practice, is to see the arising of a thought and the passing of a thought. You know, you have thoughts come and go all the time. The mind is kind of like a thought machine. It just kind of pumps out thoughts. And it's not like a personal failure that you should be thinking. It's just what the mind does. It's an important part of the mind. Without thinking, it'd be very hard to kind of negotiate our life and live our life. But to be able to see that a thought comes along, and there it is. And then to see it pass. It could be something so simple as you're kind of minding your own business, and you saw the thought arise, what should you have for lunch? You weren't thinking about lunch beforehand, and now the mind is thinking about lunch. Why is it thinking about lunch when I just had lunch? So there we are thinking about lunch, and then we realize, well, you know, I have better things to think about, or you get distracted by something, and you recognize, oh, I'm no longer thinking about lunch. That's past. To see that a thought arises and passes takes away some of the authority of our thoughts, some of the concrete weight of them. In the middle of thinking, sometimes they can just seem like this is how things should be, or this is the truth, or this is kind of like we don't know that we're thinking. We just think that we're facing the truth. You know, the truth is facing us, hitting us over the head or something. It's just there. But if you can watch a thought arise and pass, then it's just one more thing. The clouds arise and pass. Just like the clouds might come and go, thoughts come and go. Just like, a bird might appear and then fly past and disappear, a thought appears and then disappears. The mind doesn't have to get any more involved with a thought than it gets involved with a thought that goes by. So to be able to learn to be mindful of thinking to the point that we can watch the arising and passing of a thought gives a lot of freedom. Because it gets us close to that place where we can know that we're thinking and then evaluate, should I keep thinking this? Is this a useful way of thinking? Is my thinking productive? Is it accurate? Should I be thinking about something else? Should I maybe reconsider how I'm thinking now? Maybe the way I'm thinking is not very useful, and maybe there's a better way of looking at this. Sometimes our thinking is not very clever, and for example, there can be a lot of critical judgments that go on about ourselves and other people. Some of them can be quite mean. So there can be catastrophe thinking. It could be, you know, fear-based thinking where we're thinking a lot about the worst possible thing that can happen to us. And so is it really useful to keep going with those thoughts? Are they true thoughts? Are there more productive and useful ways of thinking? So to step back and know that we're thinking, and then see their thoughts don't have any weight to themselves. There's no concreteness in the thoughts. Thoughts are just kind of like, what are thoughts? You ever thought about what a thought is? You know, where does it live, and how heavy is a thought? Does it have a weight? What shape is are your thoughts? Do they have a shape? Where is the thought located? Some people point to their heads, some people point to their hearts, different places. Some people don't have a clue where their thoughts are located. Unlocalized thinking. So then to become aware of the thoughts, and then to have some choice about how we relate to it. One of the great choices, powerful choice, is not to automatically believe the thoughts. And I once said, many years ago, I gave a teaching about not believing your thoughts. I thought it was a really good idea, because I don't know about your thoughts, but some of the things I think shouldn't be believed. Someone came to me and said, "Gil, this is what they teach in cults. Don't believe your thoughts, because don't think for yourself, because just go along with what we're telling you." But I'd like to believe that as we become more mindful of our thinking, we do have more choice, and we can start using our thinking to think more critically and think better. You're allowed to think, but think better if you're going to think. And if you're not kind of embedded in your thoughts or caught in the grip of your thoughts, then there's more space and room to kind of begin thinking more and, you know, thinking more wisely. And as one of the ways to become a wiser thinker is to ask questions. Just the simple questions. It can be a question like, is this true? Is this useful? Is this kind? Is this what I want to be doing? Is there an alternative? Where is this coming from? All kinds of things, just to kind of begin exploring the thoughts. I would suggest that for most of us, most of the time, that our thinking is kind of like the narrow neck of the hourglass that most of our experiences go through. And if you can watch what happens in that hourglass, in that neck of the hourglass, you can become very wise about a lot of different things. But if you let your thinking just go unobserved, and just kind of let your thinking have the primary power or role or authority, or, you know, and just think away kind of unchecked, you just miss a great opportunity to be a little bit more in control, a little bit more self-directed, or a little bit more independent of your own mind. In Buddhist meditation circles, you'll find many different attitudes that are somehow conveyed or picked up about thinking. And I remember once I asked one of my teachers, it was not on retreat or anything, it was just more informally, I started my question to him. It was a practical question about just something at the retreat center, and I don't know, being on retreat or something, but I said, started off by saying, "What do you think about," I was going to say something. Before I could finish it, he said, "I try not to think." and I kind of thought, well, that, you know, that's strange. Maybe he meant when he's on retreat, he does try to, or he's meditating. But to completely kind of wipe yourself free from thinking is, I think it just diminishes us as a human being. Thinking is great. But at the same time, to be able to put our thoughts down and have the ability to put them down and not think is a fascinating thing to do. Even if you stop thinking just for a moment, kind of let go of your thoughts for a moment, just not think. It can be a relief, but can also be very frightening or very challenging. A little space after we let go of our thoughts, because sometimes what's behind our thinking is fear, is strong desire, ambition, a lot of strong messages about what we're supposed to be doing. And our thoughts are the vehicle to try to accomplish what we think we're supposed to be doing. And this very strong kind of drive that we have around what we have to do can be right there, can be noticed right there when we let go of our thoughts. Because the pressure is there to pick up the next thought. I can't stop thinking. I'm supposed to be. But it's one of the great things in life to sit quietly without having any thoughts or any, have a little space or gap or have a sense of connectedness to being, just being present, where thoughts don't predominate. The famous Descartes said, I think, therefore I am. I think a better way of saying it is, I am, and sometimes I think. And so the sense of I am takes precedence. Feels much richer and more valuable than whatever I'm thinking about. Sometimes we are involved in thoughts because it's entertaining, and some people use a lot of thinking to avoid being bored. But being bored is also a way of not really being in the fullness and the aliveness of emness, of I am, just here. And it's sad. I think it's a sad life to avoid boredom by engaging and doing. It's much better to face the boredom and work through it and find out what's underneath it, to really go deep into it and not have boredom be a, direct your life and force you to kind of avoid. Because boredom is always going to keep you a little bit separate from life. Boredom is a kind of sign of separation, of holding a distance from our experience in our life. And there's no experience whatsoever that's inherently boring. Boring is an evaluation of the mind. Boredom is an activity that's generated by the mind. And are you going to just, accept that activity as being an accurate representation of the situation you're in? And if you do, then you're kind of under the control, the sway of your mental activity, your thoughts and your judgments and evaluation. So to kind of turn around and not let boredom prompt you to kind of entertain yourself with fantasies and ideas but to kind of be willing to stop and face that. Not have fear force you to think constantly, but turn around and be with the fear and face it and work through it. To not have ambition, desire, whatever it is, the messages we have. So one of the things to look at, if you start kind of, and I'd recommend, that you maybe go around with a little notebook, or maybe just with your smartphone, you can speak into it, right? So many smartphones have notes capacity, so maybe that's what people do. Who knows how to write anymore? track the things you're thinking about. And first kind of get a sense of what the common themes are. And then try to have some kind of careful analysis of what are you trying to do when you think about those things? Or what's your mind trying to do? Not so much, the surface reason you're doing it, but what's the underlying impulse and what are you trying to accomplish by thinking about those common things? And then think about, is there a better way to accomplish what you think you need? So if you are being very down on yourself and critical of yourself, but that's one of the common themes, why? What's the impulse? What's that coming from there? And in what way, what are you trying to do for yourself? In what way are you trying to benefit yourself to thinking that way? Always criticizing and feeling bad about yourself. And is there a better way to benefit yourself than criticizing yourself? Is there a better way to kind of become a better person rather than kind of being worn down by the self-criticism? Self-criticism is another activity of the mind, just like boredom. And as we begin to more and better sense of thinking and judgments and criticism, these things are activities of the mind, a very special insight can arise at some point. And that's the insight, is that these are optional, that these are not inherent to what is required to be alive and breathing at this moment. That it's possible to be alive, breathing, present in a very simple, relaxed way, content, happy, at ease, not needing to pursue a thought, not needing to solve a problem, not needing to think about the future. There doesn't have to be any needs associated with our thoughts whatsoever. It's okay just to be. And if there arises a strong impulse, no, I can't do that, or I'm not able to do that. That's a great place to turn the mindful attention and look at that. Be present for it. Look, what is really going on for me? How is this operating? Remember, you want to learn how the computer works. You want to learn how you operate, as opposed to just going along. Don't just go along with what your mind is producing for you and saying and insisting and how it goes. Be curious. What is this? What's going on? And as you do this, I'd encourage you to assume a working assumption, just because with this assumption, I think you can, sometimes if you have like a reference point, you can understand something better. So the reference point for studying your own mind is to assume that the natural state of the mind that is always available is to be at peace. The natural state of the mind is to be at peace. So if that's the case, what about all this other stuff that's going on where you're not at peace? Don't use that to criticize yourself even more, but rather use it to have that assumption, the natural state of the mind is to be at peace, as a way to put a question mark next to everything else that goes on in the mind. Is this really so? How does this work? What's going on here? And it's very powerful. If you can ask those questions, put a question mark. What is this? Is this really so? Do I need to do this? Is this inherent? Asking those simple questions is a way of stepping back and not being caught by what's happening. It's to create a little bit more of an overview, a little more freedom and distance from it. And then someday, you might notice that a thought arises and it passes, and in the moment after it passes, there's freedom. There's something very powerful, very meaningful in the moment after a thought passes. But if you're just caught in the traffic jam of thoughts, you won't see that moment because, you know, bumper to bumper. So, thinking. I hope this talk supports you to become friends with your thoughts. Good working partners. So we have a few minutes. Any questions, any thoughts about the talk?
Your talk really strikes home for me. I feel like in the years I've been meditating that I've made a lot of progress in a lot of parts of my life, but I still get caught in my thought loops. The progress I've made is now I am aware that I'm caught in a thought loop.
It counts for a lot.
Okay, well, I'm still. So what's happened, whenever there's a strong event, feeling, you know, and then the thoughts go, and then I go, I am ruminating about that, which may or may not be true. And I take a breath, and it starts immediately. And again, and again. Any thoughts on that to help break that? I mean, I got as far as noting the thought.
Does that help to note it?
Excuse me?
It helps to note it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That gets me aware that I'm having the thought, but it doesn't make it stop. Well, it doesn't make it stop repeating. It gives me a tiny fraction of a second of space before it starts again.
But yes, but then you have to remember to do the note again.
Oh, I do. Oh, I do. The worst is like if I'm driving a long distance. Oh,
yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah, so good. So some people find helpful to note. Some people find it helpful to, like when you're meditating, to come back to your breath. Mm-hmm. If you're not meditating, some people find it's coming back to your body in some way, something physical. So like if you're cooking in the kitchen, come back to doing the chopping and really be there. It's good for your fingers anyway to be present. But you come back to something concrete and physical. So it's called an anchor. Mm. And not necessarily to kind of stop thinking, but not to be caught in it. And you have to do it over and over again. As you get a little bit better to see this, then sometimes what you want to see is underneath the thinking, what's the emotion that's fueling it? And generally, if there's very strong thought patterns going on that we can't free ourselves from easily, there's usually an emotion behind it that's the kind of the driving force. And what's more important than paying attention to the thoughts is to pay attention to the emotion. So for you, with the kind of thoughts you have when you're driving or other times, you might look under the surface of them and see what are the emotions and see what that teaches you.
Thank you.
Until today, I hadn't thought of, until you mentioned it, the idea of watching them, the thoughts, go away. So I'm trying to notice, like you mentioned, when they arise, and the emotions behind them. But I don't know what that feels like for them to fall away.
Yes.
I've noticed a space, or I've noticed, oh, I'm on to something new. But is there a feeling or an emotion, or what does that feel like when it falls away? Is it just empty, or is it?
Well, I'm very reluctant to answer your question, because I think everyone will have a different experience. If I say something of what it's like for me, then you might think you're supposed to be that way. I think really the task is for you to discover what it's like for you, and then just keep looking, because it probably it's a kaleidoscope. So at different times you'll experience it different ways. Different things will be revealed in that space.
Thank you.
So one more, maybe on the stage up there. Yeah, but he often has a chance to ask. I've never heard from you. and he can come up and talk to me afterwards.
I'll see you later.
Yeah, you'll see me later. And you might be shy to come up, so.
So one of the things I really pride about myself is my creativity.
Yeah.
And I get a lot of that from a very undirected style of thinking. I daydream, I drift off, especially times maybe when I shouldn't be driving, cooking, all these things. And I'm wondering how someone could be a Buddhist, how someone could cultivate mindfulness and maintain this as some kind of creative life. The peace that I get from meditating is unquestionable, but I'm worried sometimes that I might be giving up something valuable about myself.
Mm. So when I was in the, I started doing regular Buddhist practice and living in Buddhist monasteries, doing a lot of meditation, my creativity increased. You know, because creativity doesn't require a lot of thinking. It requires a certain kind of very kind of relaxed at-homeness, a certain kind of connectedness and kind of being really kind of centered and here and at ease. If you're anxious, you can't be very creative when you're anxious. And so I found myself more and more, you know, creative. And then at some point, I remember I had this, I noticed after a period of time, I wasn't being so creative anymore. I was doing art and doing all kinds of things and doing poetry and stuff. And I wasn't being creative anymore. I said, oh no, something's wrong. I'm getting tense or something. You know? So anyway, so I think practice can lead to greater creativity. And you're not supposed to... So I think what you can learn through mindfulness, and thinking is very important. People who are busy all the time, and then they stop being physically busy doing things, sometimes find they have a backlog of things to think about. And then it seems like too much. But we need to process stuff, and thinking is one way that people process stuff. It's good to have, it's actually good to put aside quality time to think. We need to have quality time with ourselves. And ideally you don't put aside, and if you never do that, and you try to meditate, then meditation becomes a time where your brain's going to say, you better do some thinking. So ideally, a person who meditates also has some other time during the day where they give themselves over to quality thinking. So for me, I like going for walks. And I just let my mind give, or when I exercise or something at the gym, I love just letting my mind get complete freedom to think whatever it wants. And sometimes issues catch up to me that I've been, you know, ignoring. Sometimes I'm surprised by what comes up. Sometimes what I've forgotten to do comes up. And sometimes creative thoughts of all kinds comes up there. So if you know that you like being creative and you know the conditions that support that, create the conditions to support that and then enjoy it, doing it. But just have a light monitoring of it. And maybe after you're finished, kind of look back at it and monitor and see what goes on. Say, did I do that the best possible way? Was that the right time, you know, or did I get tense when I did it? Was I ignoring my other responsibilities? Was I too attached? Have some overview of it. But I hope that all of us can become wise thinkers and creative thinkers and have time for the richness of life that comes from that. And last thing I'll say, the issue for most people is not your issue that you raised, but most people have some kind of addiction issue with their thoughts, you know, and they're still in recovery. Maybe, you know, they need recovery first. And then once they kind of get freed from their thoughts and not so much caught in the grip of them, then I think we'll find ourselves find that thinking is much more pleasant, enjoyable, and can be turned into a beautiful part of life.
Thank you.
So that's we need to stop. But I brought along, so I thought if I have your patience for a moment, I want to read you. These are meditation hints from the Colorado Division of Wildlife. There was a sign. What to do if you meet a thought? There are no definite rules about what to do if you meet a thought. Thought attacks are rare compared to the number of close encounters. However, if you do meet a thought before it has time to leave an area, here are some suggestions. Remember, every situation is different from the respect to the thought, the terrain, the people, and their activity. 1, stay calm. If you see a thought and it hasn't seen you, calmly leave the area. 2, stop. Back away slowly while facing the thought. Give the thought plenty of room to escape. Wild thoughts rarely attack people unless they feel threatened or provoked. Speak softly. This may reassure the thought that no harm is meant to it. If a thought stands upright or moves closer, it may be trying to detect smells in the air. This isn't a sign of aggression. Once a thought identifies you, it may leave the area or try to intimidate you by charging to within a few feet before it withdraws. Don't run or make any sudden movements. Running is likely to prompt the thought to give chase. And you can't outrun a thought. So,
if you're going to laugh after you've done your work, then you're happy.
Yes. Yes. So, yeah, it's one of the great things about thoughts. If you can be amused by the nonsense in your mind, your life can be a lot happier. So anyway, thank you all very much.